You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Live from Chicken Town, this is the Flopcast, episode 424.
On flopcast.net.
Yes, yes. Hello, Cornflake.
Hi, Kevin.
Yes, here we are.
You having some weird coffee?
I got my coffee. You've got coffee?
I've got iced tea today.
Oh, that's blasphemous. What show do you think you're on?
Well, just try and stop me.
I'm going to reach right through the internet. This changes everything. We'll try to get through this. I'm not sure if I can adjust emotionally to what's happening right now. I've got the coffee in it. I've got enough coffee for both. I have really upped my coffee intake.
Yeah?
I gotta say, for the pandemic lockdown. Yeah. All I do is just keep making coffee all day and all night.
It's the only normalcy you have.
It's all I have. But we're gonna try to keep this relatively short today, I think, even though we're all goofed up on the coffee and on the evil, traitorous iced tea. A couple of things to get through, though, starting, of course, with Cornflake. National Whatever Day.
National Whatever Day!
I think you and I remember this person for two different reasons. She's having a 95th birthday.
95?
Yeah, 95. She played TV moms back in the day. She was first known as Ruth Martin, as in Timmy Martin's mom on Lassie, but she was also a mom on Lost in Space. It's June Lockhart's birthday on June 25th.
Yeah, you know, I started suspecting that you were talking about June Lockhart. I had no idea when her birthday was, but I was aware of her age. And yeah, it did occur to me recently that June Lockhart was turning 95 this year. I remembered that because we had Marta Kristen from Lost in Space on the Flopcast 5 years ago, which was the 50th anniversary of Lost in Space.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember Marta saying in that interview that June had just turned 90 because Marta had gone to her party.
Oh, that's right.
Wow, absolutely one of the classic TV moms. And sure, the double threat of Lassie and Lost in Space, plus all the other stuff she did over the years.
I watched all those episodes of Lassie and reruns on Nickelodeon.
Yeah, I did not watch a lot of Lassie. I've just seen a little bit here and there. So you were a regular Lassie viewer.
Oh, yeah.
That's cool.
I lost track of how many times Timmy got stuck in the well, but I watched it all.
Yeah, June Lockhart and Guy Williams were the parents, the Robinsons, on the original Lost in Space. And they brought such an old Hollywood glamour to that show. She was coming off of Lassie, and Guy Williams was Zorro. You know, he was TV's Zorro before that. I've seen June Lockhart in person a number of times.
My goodness.
Yes, because the very first big Lost in Space cast reunion happened, I believe, in 1990. For the 25th anniversary in Boston. And they had the whole cast there. They had everybody there except for Guy Williams, who had already died by then. But they had everybody. And that was an amazing reunion. And June's a talker. Like, she managed to practically monopolize the conversation. I went to a weird thing that she was at as well. There, for many, many years, there was a Boston daytime talk show called People Are Talking, hosted by Tom Bergeron for quite a while. They did an episode about TV moms. So I jumped on the subway and went screaming down there to catch the show. And it was Tom Bergeron interviewing three classic TV moms who were all very important to me. Because, yeah, June Lockhart was there and Mabel King, and Mabel King was the mom on What's Happening.
Oh, wow.
And also Steve Martin's mother in The Jerk. You know, Mabel King, she was there. And from Leave It to Beaver. Barbara Billingsley was there. And you know what a raging Leave It to Beaver fan I am.
What a lineup.
Yeah, so I went to see the three classic TV moms edition of People Are Talking, and June was very funny at that show also. Yeah, she was what a cool lady, and yeah, very, very funny.
I thought after Lassie, I had lost complete track of her, and yet I realized she was in a bunch of things in the 80s and 90s that I watched, even if it was only for an episode or two. Like, she was one of the voices in the cartoon Pound Puppies. She was Aunt Millie. I definitely watched the Pound Puppies. And she was also a kindergarten teacher in Full House. And she was on Beverly Hills 90210.
Yeah, she kept busy. I think she did a lot of soap opera work also, I believe.
Yes, she did.
And then I think at one of the Lost in Space reunions I went to, they mentioned that June and Mark Goddard were on a soap opera together years later. And they kind of worked in a little scene where they kind of looked at each other as if they were sort of recognizing each other, just as a little...
Oh, a nod.
Little nod, Easter egg for the fans of Lost in Space. Yeah, so she did so much stuff over the years, and returned to Lost in Space when they did the movie in the late 90s, which played to mixed reviews at best, we might say.
Right.
But most of the original cast popped up in little cameos in that, including a very funny cameo from June. She was a teacher or a principal or something. As we mentioned last week, I think, I just defended that Lost in Space movie in classic sci-fi court for one of the new online Dragon Con sci-fi classics track panels that we've been doing. So you can see me defend that movie, and June's appearance in that movie was part of my presentation. So check that out, everybody. We have links up to it, I believe. And yeah, yikes, 95, and one of our all-time favorites. Happy birthday, June Lockhart.
Yes, indeed.
Maureen Robinson. Before we get to your 90s albums list, you brought your list, right?
I do have my list.
Okay, we're going to get to that. I just want to mention a weird thing that's been happening to me this week. You know, I go out and run like a maniac every day.
Yeah, I do know that.
And I might be hallucinating at this point because 2 days ago, I went out my afternoon run and I'm running along. I'm on the street and I'm running by an auto repair shop. There's a truck, like a tow truck or flatbed truck, parked in front of the repair shop. And up on top of the flatbed of this truck is Herbie the Love Bug.
What now?
And I'm just running by. I look over. Oh, there's Herbie the Love Bug.
Whoa.
It's apparently been towed to the shop.
Oh, my.
But this is, you know, the white, you know, Volkswagen Beetle number 53 is on the side. It's the Love Bug. It's Herbie the Love Bug in for repairs. And I just kept going. I'm like, I'm not going to stop for the Love Bug. Got to keep moving. That's weird. And off I go. Yesterday, I went out for my afternoon run, and there's Herbie the Love Bug again.
Huh.
The truck was gone. Tow truck's gone. Now Herbie the Love Bug is just parked in front of the repair shop.
This is some weird automobile celebrity sighting you keep having, Kevin.
Yeah, then I was looking around like, ooh, where's the General Lee? You know, where's the Batmobile? Are all the cars of my youth going to show up? But yeah, the Love Bug was there again yesterday. Today, I went out just a few hours ago as we record, and I go running by that same auto shop. There's Herbie the Love Bug again. It's still there. This time, the difference was the hood was popped open. So now they're working on that thing. Or maybe Herbie's working on itself. I don't know. That was a sentient automobile, as I recall.
Yes.
From the movies. I have not seen a Love Bug movie in many, many decades. Have you?
No, I've not in quite some time.
I don't think I even ever saw one in the theaters, but it would pop up like on the Wonderful World of Disney,
right?
You know, Sunday nights. I think that's where I did all my Love Bug viewing.
Same.
Back in the day. But I actually looked up the Love Bug tonight because it's on my mind, obviously, you know, because it's following me, I think. And I looked it up and I was kind of surprised. Do you know how many Herbie the Love Bug movies have been made?
I don't.
Give me a number. Take a guess.
Oh, seven?
That's very, very close. Well done. And you did much better than I would have, because I did not realize how many they made. There are six.
Oh, okay.
Which is a lot.
Yes.
More than enough. But the six are, I looked this up, it started in 1968, the original movie, The Love Bug. That was 1968. Right. Buddy Hackett is in that one,
mm-hmm.
who we mainly know from Rankin Bass, Jack Frost, because he's the groundhog.
That's right.
Or as your people say, the whistle pig.
Isn't he also the seagull in The Little Mermaid?
He's done lots of stuff, but for me,
yeah,
it's that stupid groundhog from Jack Frost, and we end right there. 1974, 6 years later, they waited 6 years, and then the sequel, Herbie Rides Again. And this one was Helen Hayes was the star. Ken Berry is in there because Ken Berry starred in so many goofy Disney movies back then, including, of course, for our purposes, The Cat from Outer Space, the most important movie ever made. You know, that's Ken Berry, but he's also in Herbie Rides Again. Stephanie Powers is in Herbie Rides Again, who would go on to do Heart to Heart. And I believe the villain, I think he's the bad guy in the movie, was Keenan Wynn. Who we, again, going back to Rankin Bass, that's the Winter Warlock from Santa Claus is Coming to Town.
Right.
So a lot of Rankin Bass star power in the Love Bug movies. 1977, we got Love Bug movie number 3. That was Herbie Goes to Monte Carlo. So we're going European at this point. This time, as the mechanic, we had Don Knotts.
Oh, very nice.
So come on. I would watch Don Knotts in anything.
Me too.
The second movie, Herbie Rides Again, I believe I had the ViewMaster set for Herbie Rides Again. So I probably experienced that movie most in ViewMaster form. Probably the best way to watch it. But now jumping ahead to movie number 4 was into the 80s now, 1980. The fourth and final of the original set of Love Bug movies was Herbie Goes Bananas. Yes. So named because they go South American this time. Herbie goes to compete in a race in Brazil, I believe. And this one stars another favorite of ours here on the Flopcast, Cornflake, from The Facts of Life and from Schoolhouse Rock, Cloris Leachman.
Oh, hey.
I should probably slip into my Cloris Leachman costume.
Yes, you should.
Right now, in celebration of her appearance in Herbie Goes Bananas. Then, here's one that I completely forgot existed. I definitely never saw this. Maybe you did. Do you recall? Because this was a TV movie.
Mm-hmm.
1997. It was just called The Love Bug, starring, strangely, Bruce Campbell. The dude from all those Evil Dead movies and whatnot.
Oh.
He's the star of The Love Bug now. Do you have any memory of this? Because I totally don't.
I do not. I don't remember.
Yeah. Also in the cast was Mickey Dolenz.
Oh, hey.
So that's interesting.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
It feels like we're learning new things about Mickey Dolenz all the time.
There is no end to what we can and will learn about Mickey Dolenz. And yeah, that was a busy year for Mickey Dolenz, because 97 is when the Monkees did their Just Us comeback album. Also strangely in The Love Bug, and this did sound familiar to me, but comedian Dana Gould, who I'm a huge fan of, one of my favorite comics working today, is Dana Gould. And he actually has a part in this movie also. And it sounded familiar. I'm pretty sure he mentioned this on his podcast at some point. It must have somehow come up that he was in this bizarre. I've heard him say once or twice whenever some crazy thing like this from his past comes up, he likes to point out, he says, "My career has no bottom."
Right.
Because that's the kind of ridiculous credits he has hiding on IMDb. So that's the TV movie version. And then finally, I do remember this coming out, although I never saw it, but there was Herbie Fully Loaded. That was the Lindsay Lohan movie.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that? 2005.
Yes, I do.
Which, Matt, I feel like that just came out, but even that's 15 years old at this point.
Yeah, unreal.
Yeah, I totally avoided that, so I know nothing about that. I was surprised, though, when I looked it up today, that it also co-stars Matt Dillon and Michael Keaton. So you got some...
I had no idea.
...impressive co-stars backing up Lindsay in Herbie Fully Loaded. Anyway, Cornflake, the point is, I've been running into The Love Bug all week.
Herbie is the gift that keeps on giving.
I'm kind of afraid to leave the house tomorrow. I feel like I might just look out the window tomorrow morning and it's going to be like...
And there'll be a love bug.
Engine revving right outside the house, you know?
Right outside your door.
It's going to turn into a horror movie like Christine. This is all going to go horribly wrong. But that's what I'm dealing with anyway. Thank you. It's a story that goes nowhere, but that's what happened to me this week.
You've got a love bug that just won't buzz off.
Yes. So let's jump over to you. Now, to recap, last week, based on a request from my buddy Jim from the Sponge Awareness Foundation, I listed for you 10 albums from the 1980s. I decided I would pick which album was most important to me from each year of the 1980s. And I meant like when I was that age, like
right.
In 1980, what was the most important album to me that year and so on for the whole decade. And we went through that list last week and you provided very bizarre commentary and we all had a lovely time. Remember?
I do remember.
Then we thought we should make Cornflake do this.
And not for the 80s.
No, we're jumping ahead to the following decade. That'd be the 90s. So, Cornflake, have you prepared a list of 90s albums for us?
You betcha. And I used the exact same format as you because there were albums that came out in the 90s that I got way into, but not the year that they came out.
Right. So we're talking Cornflake in the year 1990. What was the most important record for you that year? And so forth. You're going to call out the albums, and then I shall attempt to pontificate
attempt?
On each album, having done zero research and possibly knowing nothing about them. I have no idea what's on your list.
Oh, I wholeheartedly trust in your expertise for these albums from the 90s, Kevin. I'm sure that you were as dialed into these as I was.
We'll see, because whether or not I know anything about them, I shall pretend that I do, and we'll see how it goes. So, let's go. What do you have? Cornflake's album pick for the year 1990.
No, I'm not going to do this for every year, Kevin, but I do want to mention for 1990 specifically. In this podcast, you almost ended up having to talk about Please Hammer, Don't Hurt Him by MC Hammer.
Yeah.
Or To the Extreme, Vanilla Ice.
Wow.
Lucky for you, in 1990... The New Kids on the Block came out with an album called Step by Step.
Yes, of course they did.
Got the album and even saw the tour.
Outstanding. Was this the year of your first concert?
This was.
This was it. This was the big Cornflake's first concert, famously, we have established, was New Kids on the Block. It was this year. It was this album, Step by Step. And Step by Step, so named because they covered Step by Step by Eddie Rabbit. It was largely a covers album consisting of country pop songs such as those popularized by Eddie Rabbit a decade previously.
Nobody saw it coming.
Yeah, those New Kids on the Block, they love A Rainy Night. Everybody knows that. So they were way into Eddie Rabbit. And also they used this album for the soundtrack for the sitcom Step by Step.
Yeah, that was a neat coincidence.
It all worked out.
Worked out nicely.
Yeah, Step by Step. That was Suzanne Summers' show, right?
Yes, it was.
Yes. You got Patrick Duffy, the man from Atlantis. He can breathe underwater. And Suzanne Summers, of course, she's the sheriff. So we have the man from Atlantis and she's the sheriff together. They're underwater with a bunch of stepchildren. Desperately trying to hold their breath, except for Duffy. He's perfectly comfortable under the water, and he insists that they all live down there. It's a very weird show, made even weirder by the New Kids on the Block soundtrack. That's an excellent choice to start off your list.
Oh, I'm glad. I thought for sure I was going to get the side eye for not picking Flood, which came out that year, too, by the MIB Giants. But
Yeah. But you were a little late to the Flood party.
I was very late to the TMBG party in general.
Saying Flood party, I suddenly remembered there was a band back then called Mr. Flood's Party.
There was?
Yeah.
Wow.
I don't remember what they did or if I ever saw them, but that was a band that existed. It might have been a Boston area local band, but I digress drastically. Let's move on. 1991.
What a year for albums 1991 all over the musical map for me, although admittedly a lot of my picks for that year would have potentially been alternative rock. But I realized out of all of them, there was only one that I had the tape for that I listened to continuously, and that was Mr. Big, Lean Into It.
Mr. Big! And this is like peak hair metal era. You know, hair metal was on the rise, certainly through the mid to late 80s and early 90s. Hair metal was out of control and just getting as ridiculous as it could possibly be. And there's Mr. Big. Strangely, their biggest song that we all remember was To Be With You, which was like a lovely, soft kind of a song.
Right.
Lovely song. I know you're a fan of that song. I remember from previous conversations that you used to sing that song to your brothers and sisters.
Yes.
See how I pay attention sometimes when you say things to me? Not always. Not always.
That's what I like about you, Kevin.
When it comes to Mr. Big, though, when it comes to hair metal, then I'm like, oh, I am going to pay attention and file this away. And Mr. Big, of course, was named after the bass player, strangely, not the front man.
Right.
But this is one of those situations like Fleetwood Mac, you know, the band is named after the drummer.
Right.
Mr. Big, the band is named after the bass player whose name was Jefferson Big.
Oh.
With three G's, not two, three, B-I-G-G-G.
That's a lot of G's.
The record label insisted they shorten it to just the traditional spelling with just the one G for the band name. But there's a little bit of Mr. Big trivia for you kids out there. Enjoy. 1992, what you got?
3 years, 5 months, and 2 days in the life of was the name of the album that I was constantly cranking. And that was Arrested Development. Now, Kevin, do you remember Arrested Development at all?
You're going to be surprised, Cornflake, but I totally remember Arrested Development. Arguably a rap act.
Yep.
And by arguably, I mean definitely. That was a rap band. But they stood out as very, very different from the rap scene at the time and very critically acclaimed right away. And they were racking up Grammy Awards and stuff for that record. And I liked Arrested Development. I was a fan as well. And, you know, I'm not a rap guy. Are you shocked?
I am astonished.
See? And I can keep going, Cornflake. I saw Arrested Development live in concert. Yeah.
I am so jealous. Wow.
This was a festival show. I think this was the WOMAD Festival, I believe. W-O-M-A-D, which I think stood for World of Music and Dance. That's how desperate they were for a stupid acronym. The WOMAD tour was headlined by Peter Gabriel, but I believe Midnight Oil was there as well. It was an amazing lineup, and Arrested Development. So how do you like that? I know what I'm talking about every once in a while.
Yeah, you do. I am so impressed.
It directly inspired the later sitcom of the same name, Arrested Development, the comedy TV series in which Jason Bateman plays an aspiring rap singer.
Right.
And he's gathering his team, his crew, to conquer the world of rap. It was him and Ricky Schroeder and Justine Bateman, his sister, his real-life sister. That was a great, great sitcom, Arrested Development, with Jason Bateman, all based on the music of Arrested Development, the rap band from the early 90s. 1993, what you got?
Oh. Well, it was a self-titled album, kind of, referred to sometimes as the wedding album. I'm talking about Duran Duran by Duran Duran, the big comeback, if you will.
This was 1993, and yeah, the world had kind of moved on and forgotten all about Duran Duran, but yeah, they came crashing back with This Was Ordinary World. Would I be correct about that?
Yes.
Yeah, Duran Duran is back. I remember Chris Farley playing Simon Le Bon on Saturday Night Live when this comeback happened. Check that out, kids. You got to see Chris Farley as Simon Le Bon. He was great. He started singing The Reflex. He switched it up. He went old school. Yeah, man, we love Duran Duran. I'm trying to remember. Have you seen Duran Duran live?
Yes, I have. And they were amazing.
Yeah, that's kind of the secret that people don't realize. If you have not seen Duran Duran live, they've got the reputation as MTV New Wave Video Pretty Boys. Right. Understandably. Check out Duran Duran, kids. What you got for 1994?
For 1994, everybody else was listening to edgy alternative music.
Yes, we're deep into the grunge era now.
Oh yeah, this is the year that the soundtrack from The Crow came out. That's what all my friends were listening to, and I would take a listen or two just to try to understand where they were all coming from, but I couldn't stick with it. I was into Erasure, and the album I Say, I Say, I Say came out that year.
Erasure, wow. And that's a band that quietly is super popular.
Yes.
They're very popular, they have a big following, and yet somehow nobody knows it.
Right.
That's Erasure. They had their kind of new wave alt hits in the 80s. They're fantastic.
Oh, that album was my jam. Loved it.
How do you feel about Erasures in general? Not the band, but the pencil smudges.
I feel they give depth and texture to the world, Kevin.
Yeah, they're great.
I'm glad we agree.
Yeah, it's all we care about. We're halfway there. Let's go to 1995.
It was Amy Mann, All the Way, I'm with Stupid.
Oh, good one. Yeah, Amy. This was her second solo record, post Till Tuesday, of course. And yeah, I was way into this album as well. In fact, this was the first time I saw Amy Mann in concert. It would have been in 1995, down at Lupo's Heartbreak Hotel, classic giant goofy rock club in Providence, Rhode Island. I was there to see Amy this very year.
The voice sounded so familiar to me, but it took me forever to figure out that she was the vocalist from Till Tuesday.
Oh, yeah. And I was already a huge Till Tuesday fan before her solo career. Those records hold up as well. Till Tuesday made 3 albums in the mid to late 80s. Those are great records. So yeah, I totally relate to this pick. And yeah, the record was called I'm With Stupid. And I remember the ads in the comic books for t-shirts. There'd be like a full page ad with a bunch of wacky novelty t-shirts you could send away for. And that was the matching pair of t-shirts. You know, the I'm With Stupid and the Stupid's With Me, with the hands with the fingers pointing towards each other.
Mm-hmm.
And you and your buddy are supposed to walk around like two idiots. We should do that.
We should. Why haven't we done that already?
We should totally do that. I'm going to find a comic book from 1977, and hopefully that offer is still valid, and we can get our stupid shirts. What you got for 1996?
1996, Cornflake's album of the year was unquestionably Bare Naked Ladies, Born on a Pirate Ship.
Okay, yes. I know the Bare Naked Ladies. I have these records, but what are the songs I would know from this specific BNL record?
Oh, you would know The Old Apartment, that's for sure.
Yeah. Okay. That was performed at a Sponge Awareness Foundation concert once.
Was it?
Not by the Sponge Awareness Foundation.
Ah.
That was our buddy John, who played, he played everything with us. Our friend John could play every instrument. And he backed us up playing bass and playing guitar and saxophone and everything else. The saxophone that you hear, the Flopcast theme music saxophone, that's John, that guy. And John did his own set in the middle of during the break between Sponge Awareness Foundation sets. We had John just do his own set, which sounded way better than the Sponge Awareness Foundation. Anyway, we should not have come back on stage. It should have just been, John, just keep going. Please, just keep going. But yeah, he did some Bare Naked Lady songs at least once in the middle of a Sponge Awareness show, including The Old Apartment. That's a great song. I know that one. Where are we? 1997?
1997. Now, I always say this band will take you back to the 90s. They were a quintessential 90s band. And
please be Dishwalla. Please be Dishwalla.
Oh,
go ahead.
You wish, Kevin. I am talking about Toad the Wet Sprocket. They had an album that year called Coil.
I remember them.
Do you now?
Yeah, had some good songs. They were good. I could probably recognize 2 or 3 Toad the Wet Sprocket songs. What a weird name. Do you know where the band name comes from?
Yes, it is a Monty Python reference.
Oh, see, I'm so weak in my Monty Python knowledge that I totally missed the reference. I am a fan of toads in general, as far as just weird little creatures go, you know, hopping around.
They are very cute.
I like a good toad. When I was a kid, I used to see toads all the time. We'd go creeping around in the yard and in the woods, and we'd always find toads. And, you know, I have not seen a toad in so long. Where did all the toads go, Cornflake, from my life?
They've all been replaced by turkeys.
And Herbie the Love Bug. Let's you and I go out toad hunting sometime.
I would like that, even if it means we just see a bunch of turkeys.
I did see Mojo Nixon a couple of times, and Mojo's backup band for several years was called the Toad Lickers. So it was Mojo Nixon and the Toad Lickers. So I have seen at least one toad band. And that's Lickers like booze. Lickers, Q-U-O-R-S, you know?
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
Classy.
Yeah, Mojo keeps it classy. You know that. If we all know just one thing about Mojo Nixon... A very classy gentleman. 1998, what you got?
Oh, it's almost a repeat from 1996. There was just no contest once again. The Bare Naked Ladies came roaring back with their album Stunt.
Oh, so you're going off format for me, because I specifically avoided repeating artists on my list.
Oh, I could not help it. The influence of the Bare Naked Ladies in the late 90s in my life was just...
You can set your own rules. We'll allow it.
Yes.
Why do we care? It's the Flopcast, so we're back to Bare Naked Ladies.
Yeah. Stunt was all I cared about in 1998, Kevin.
Was this the 1 week?
Yes.
This was the album with the song 1 week. Okay.
Yes, it was.
This is when they really exploded commercially in America. This was suddenly a monster band.
Yep.
Speaking of Bare Naked Ladies, that's a scary transition, right?
Yeah! I'm like, where is this going?
Here's something weird I was just reading yesterday. As businesses are trying to reopen, even though in most cases they probably shouldn't, you know, while we're all locked down, in Rhode Island, they're trying to reopen the strip clubs.
Hashtag priorities.
Part of the attempt to reopen involved they're attempting to move the strip clubs outdoors.
That's beautiful.
I'm not quite sure how this is going to work logistically.
What are they going to do on the nights when it's really cold out?
Yeah, it doesn't make a bit of sense for lots of reasons. But anyway, you kids, youngsters in Rhode Island, you know, get out there. This is your big chance. Go do some exploring, won't you? Okay, moving on, Cornflake. I believe this brings us to the end of the 90s, right? The final album on your list. What do you have for 1999?
This is a tough year, but it ultimately wound up being Lost and Gone Forever by local band Guster, Boston Boys.
I know you're a fan of Guster. This is a band I never really got into. I know people who are huge fans of Guster. I have yet to really check them out. I've just been very busy, you know, for the last 21 years. I've been busy. I'm sorry.
But do you know where the title of the album Lost and Gone Forever comes from?
Where does it come from?
Oh, My Darling Clementine. You were lost and gone forever.
Oh, right. Okay. You know, I've been slacking off in my viewing of Huckleberry Hound cartoons. All right. So that's your final pick for the 90s then. Right?
Yeah, I have to hand it to you, Kevin. I had no idea you had so much music knowledge when it came to albums in the 90s.
Yeah, it turns out I'm an expert on everything, even records that I've never heard.
Well done.
That's the magic of the Flopcast. All right, good job. That was fun going through your favorite records.
I thought so.
And then suffering through me. just being obnoxious.
It's fair turnabout.
It all worked out. I've got some plugs to get through, but, you know, let's wrap up the show first, and then we'll do the plugs, and then we'll collapse.
Okay, I am all ready for that. Flopcast.net is our website. We're also at facebook.com/flopcast. Our handle on Twitter is @flopcast. And on Instagram, we are @_flopcast.
Yeah, that's where to find us. And other places you can find us this week. In the nasty world of podcasting, that would be, well, over on Earth Station 1, Our flagship podcast here on the ESO Network, of course, is Earth Station One, and this week's episode co-stars our own Mayor of Chickentown. They had Felicity, the mayor, as a guest on Earth Station One this week, and the subject is the classic 80s Coen Brothers comedy film Raising Arizona.
Oh, like the Coen Brothers.
So check out the mayor talking about Raising Arizona. They've been doing a lot of like revisiting classic movies on Earth Station One because new movies aren't coming out anymore.
Right. There's that.
It opened up a lot of holes in their schedule over at Earth Station One, but they've made the best of it by filling it in by revisiting some classics such as Raising Arizona. So check that out. And also here on the ESO Network, specifically for our Patreon supporters, because, you know, the ESO Network Patreon. If you are a Patreon supporter of ESO, we have just released the third episode of ESO Bored Silly, sort of a freeform conversation podcast starring the ESO Network Board of Directors, of which I am a member. So you can hear me and the rest of the board. That's Mike and Mike and Mary and Scott. The five of us are just goofing around, and it's ESO Bored Silly, episode 3. The subject we kind of started with, although there's a lot of drift into other subjects, but we were discussing our favorite summertime beverages.
Ooh.
And things got silly from there, you know? So ESO Bored Silly, episode 3, and also Flopcast. The Flopcast weird extra bonus episode 8 is also available exclusively for ESO Network Patreon supporters. And the subject of our latest Patreon bonus episode is also a movie from the 80s. This is The Mayor and Me looking at Enemy Mine. And that was a very unusual science fiction movie from 1985, starring Dennis Quaid and Louis Gossett Jr., trapped on a weird planet somewhere. Enemy Mine. You can hear the mayor and I break it all down for you. That's a fun show as well, and we have more of those Patreon bonus Flopcasts on the way sometime soon. So lots of fun stuff available for Patreon supporters. Check that out if you can. Meanwhile, we should get out of here. So hey, kids, you know, be safe, be good, be kind, wear your masks. Support the protesters. We'll see you next week.
Peace and cookies.
The Hitchhiker's Guide to Podcasting has this to say about the weekly Earth Station One podcast. Mildly entertaining, not nearly as exciting as the popping of bubble wrap, but slightly better than listening to Vogon poetry. Be mildly entertained by Mike and Mike as they tackle an assortment of geeky topics each week. Check out the Earth Station One podcast and let your inner geek out to play.
Oh, Cornflake, hello.
Hi.
It's the secret after show.
Yes, it is. Hey, I have a burning question.
Oh, good.
Do you think that anybody's giving me the side eye for, throughout the whole of the 90s, not picking any of the Weird Al albums that came out?
Yeah, people are seething with rage. What would be your top Weird Al Yankovic record of the 90s?
Well, let's start by pointing out what you'd have to choose from.
Okay. I'm going to try to do that from memory right now.
Okay.
Weird Al records from the 90s. The first one would have been Off the Deep End.
1992.
Yeah. Then you would have had Alapalooza.
1993.
Then Bad Hair Day, 96.
That's right.
Yes. And then we jump to 99, Running with Scissors. I think I got it.
Yes, you got them all.
That's from memory. Thank you.
That is amazing.
It's like we're nerds or something.
Well, so from those four, I should pick a favorite.
Yes.
Oh, tough one. I don't know if you're going to try to do this after you hear which one I pick, but I think it's going to have to be Alapalooza.
All right. Interesting pick. That would definitely not be mine. I would not pick either of the first two records just because music was so bad in the early 90s that he was doing parodies of so many really annoying songs. And so for me, as Weird Al records go, those early 90s records are among the weaker Al albums just because of the material he was dealing with, you know?
I'm a little bit nostalgic for that material. It may not have been the best music, but it was the soundtrack of my life.
Yeah, you tolerate the early 90s pop scene way better than me. But that was like Gerardo and Billy Ray Cyrus. You know, there's some scary, horrifying stuff being parodied.
Oh, I almost picked Moritmo from Gerardo as one of my favorite albums of the 90s.
So I would definitely go late 90s for Weird Al Records. I think I would go Running with Scissors.
Excellently produced album. So good.
What's your favorite Herbie the Love Bug album from the 90s?
I think it has to be Herbie Sings the Blues.
I'm so confused right now.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at ESONetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.